Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. This is World Watch's program number 693, March the 18th, 1985. I want to briefly mention two actors and an actress that have affected history and relate directly to each other in terms of affecting the history and the times we're living now. Those are Ronald Reagan, Pope John Paul II, and Evita Perón. Before I get into that, though, I want to mention the brief acting career of Richard Nixon, but the early career of Nixon that ties directly into these characters and with these characters, because what we have today is the actual usurping of the congressional policies for all foreign policy. All money that we need goes to the space program and to the Pentagon. The domestics can fight and figure out and get elected on the little issues, and the rest the government will give to the military for whatever they want. And when they want private wars, they use special soldiers, mercenaries, special CIA forces linked to the intelligence community under the guise of humanitarian or hospitable, careful medical relief that are directly linked not only to the Pentagon and the Central Intelligence Agency, but to the Nazis that came into this country that I have been making allegations about for a long, long time. Now, when the importance of Nixon, and he, as I say, he has these links to these various areas that I have been stressing for since my first published article in 1972, Nixon's role in these various activities. But one thing I learned new this week that I think is very important to the pieces of the puzzle was that when Richard Nixon was at law school in Duke University in 1937, he decided to go to New York and look into where he might want to practice law. And he said the only law firm that showed any interest in him was Donovan, Leisure, Newton, and Lombard. And they wrote to him after a month after the interview. But he wasn't interested. He says he wasn't in that thing. This is before the OSS was formed, but Donovan had a history of going back to Great Britain with William Stevenson. He was strong with the military, the very far right wing. I don't know why Franklin Roosevelt put him in charge of intelligence. He was so conservative and actually hated Franklin Roosevelt. But it's interesting that the first office that Richard Nixon goes to is the law firm that's going to set up the British American Canadian Corporation that was formed in 1945 after the war that will begin to build up the German cartels and becomes the World Commerce Corporation that I've been talking to you about since January, and that Clay Shaw from New Orleans, who links to the assassination of John Kennedy, making the presidency of Richard Nixon finally possible, ties into the World Commerce Corporation and the very law office. It was this law office that set up this organization that then formed Permandex, which was the backbone of the assassination teams going out throughout the world since 1945. William Donovan had influence in the OSS, of course, bringing in the Nazis, as did Alan Dulles, bringing in Nazis and making agreements before the war was over. But then his law firm set up this corporation that when the CIA was formed again, it was part of the intelligence community. And this is the firm that Richard Nixon chose to go to. Besides being cleared from the FBI in the same time sequence, he then goes on to say that he graduated from Duke and came to California and took an acting part, which I was not aware of before, in 1938, a local theater in Ayn Rand's play. Of course, she's always been a darling of the conservatives. The night of January the 16th, and he enjoyed playing the prosecuting attorney in the play, and he went for casting tryouts in another play called The Dark Tower, and there he met Pat at that play, and he asked her if he could take her out, and she said she was busy, and he said, "You shouldn't say that because someday I'm going to marry you." And that was the first proposal. So he'd been to Donovan's office and then with J. Edgar Hoover and proposes, tells Pat, "I'm going to marry you." And December 41, right after that, he gets a call from Washington, D.C., from a professor from Duke, David Cavers, and says, "You have a job with the Office of Price Administration in Washington." Now, the common denominator between Evita Perón and Pope John Paul II and Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger is that they never have to open a door. Somebody calls them and says, I want you for this role, I want you to go to this school, I want you in Harvard, I want you in Congress, and they directed their careers. They are definitely puppets, and of course the bottom line is who is pulling the strings. And Richard Nixon was in Washington in 1941, and then in 1942 he goes into the Navy, he becomes a naval officer, and gets his assignment to go overseas. Now Richard Nixon wrote a 1,100-page autobiography, and he devoted 2 pages to the war, to World War II. He was overseas from 1942 to 45, and on page 27 and 28, he covers that whole experience. That must have been a very deep briefing of intelligence activity, just as Senator Joe McCarthy was in the Pacific, and two men, Germans from Wisconsin, said, we want you to run for president, who had contacts directly to Hitler's Germany, and put Senator Joe McCarthy right in Congress. At the same time, Richard Nixon has left out of his autobiography everything except that he was inducted, he went overseas in 1942, he left, and then on page 29, this is the third page of his war experience, he says, while he was over at Green Island in the South Pacific, I met Charles Lindbergh, who was flying combat missions, testing new planes for the Air Force. Now, Lindbergh had moved to England. He was a staunch conservative, started the America First Committee here, wanted America to stay out of the war, as did Joe Kennedy. He got disillusioned with America, close to Father Coughlin and Gerald L. K. Smith and all the rabble-rousers of the 30s. After moving to England, he was about to move to Nazi Germany. He got a star award by Hermann Goering in the Air Force and was to move into there just in 1940 when Hitler went into Poland. So being an American, he came home and put on an American uniform. And a couple of years later, the commanding officer invites Richard Nixon to a small dinner, he notes, not a big dinner, in Lindbergh's honor. Now, Nixon covers and says, well, I was busy playing poker that night, but later I invited him back to the White House. I wonder if he knew then that he'd be inviting him back to the White House. But a lot of people don't think history works that way. I happen to think it does work that way. Certain people are handpicked that they could fill certain roles. So his war effort was to leave San Francisco, go to Green Island, meet Charles Lindbergh, and by 1944 his overseas duty was over. So by page 33 and page 22 is blank in the book, so I'm not giving one extra page away. It says, running for Congress. He does, in one sentence, say he finished up the war in 1945 in January. I went east to work on a Navy contract on terminations. And he doesn't tell you it's Bell Helicopter and Marriott and the aerospace industry. And during those months, he traveled to Washington, Philadelphia, New York, and Buffalo for 4 months. And then the same page, running for Congress. That's the war. Donovan, J. Edgar Hoover, Charles Lindbergh, then he's going to run for Congress, all on 4 pages. And he tells how Pat and I were sitting around thinking, what should I do in civilian life? When all of a sudden the answer came in the form of a letter sent to him, still in the Navy, by Herman Perry, manager of the Bank of America. And the rest is history, saying, do you want to run for Congress against Jerry Voorhees in 1946? Well, Richard Nixon ran for Congress, but the aerospace, Howard Hughes and the Committee of 100, C. Arnold Smith, who is now serving jail time for swindling his bank out of millions of dollars, was one of the backers of Richard Nixon. And the entire group of the far, far right, almost the Silver Shirt Gang that believed in the fascism, the doctrines of fascism, the entire cult that was before the Cold War, it was the pre-Pearl Harbor days where there were a lot of people that were staunch conservatives and then a lot that made aerospace industry that was to mushroom after the war. They were behind Richard Nixon. That was the Committee of 100 handpicked, and he ran against Jerry Voorhees, and Senator Joe McCarthy was going to Washington to become a member of Congress at the time. They, of course, would blend their careers together. In 1972, in the article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped?, just to remind you a little bit about how Nixon came to power, what I said then, and this was 13 years ago, or 13 this August, the rise of Adolf Hitler and fascism in Germany was carefully planned. And I say this because two people were on television and they're touring around the United States today. They were on television about 3 weeks ago, a woman from a concentration camp from Auschwitz and a man who was in the Hitler Youth who believed in Hitler and believed everything he said. And they were asked the question, each of them, how do you feel about the United States? And the woman who was in the concentration camp says, oh, I'm not worried. It can't happen here. And the member of the Hitler Youth who was in with Hitler through the whole war, an elderly gentleman, now said, it's possible but not probable, because in Germany, the government was behind. Hitler was the government, and the government was Hitler, and they were all behind it. But in this country, we have freedom of speech. Well, you may have freedom of speech, but several weeks ago you noticed the outright threat to one of the three major broadcasts because they do investigative journalism, and the others could be bought up just as the movie studios were bought up and give us junk after junk. The TV is junk plus junk, but the point is when a little thing seeps through, they get punished, and that's a reminder, no seepage of this kind of investigative journalism. So if his premise is that if the government becomes fascist, then you have a chance that fascism will take all over. Well, of course it will. And when he talks about freedom of speech, how much can you really say in this country and get it to a large mass of people? It doesn't exist. Now, I compared the rise of Nixon to the rise of Adolf Hitler in my first article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? And I said the rise of Richard Nixon in the United States was carefully planned. In 1963, the political assassination of John Kennedy in Dallas became necessary for our own hidden clandestine government to maintain control. Now, that was 1972. In 1985, we have the likes of John Singlaub, and Mr. Edward Lansdale is back in office, and J. Peter Grace, and certain characters that are key to what this country is to become as against what it was and how they operated through the past years and what they're doing now in Central America. And as I say, the troops someday and are saying they're ready to work in this country. The Nazi Party was claiming there'll be a May Day this year, like the House of the Long Nights, of the Broken Glass, you know, it in Germany, the Crystal Night, that was the shattering of the homes and breaking the windows and breaking in. So we've been warned this May we're going to get it here, and these people are the same people who work with the mercenary armies and the armies that we're sending to go behind the line and work with the CIA to take the military options on their own without the elected officials. And I said this hidden clandestine government, in order to have control, killed John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, and these same people I've been talking about were involved in those murders. Richard Nixon, the front man and leader of the illegal government, was mistaken for comical. I'm quoting my Realist article in 1972 by the intellectuals. Those are the Harvard, Yale people that thought Nixon was funny or thought Reagan was funny, and the Princetons, the MITs, out of a different social circle, but using them for specific purposes. And, of course, when Nixon took the oath of office, the clandestine activities continued, and I said, and I went into the background in that article. I won't read the whole thing for you because many of you have the article. If not, you can get a reprint of it. But to refresh your memory, I was talking about Alan Dulles and his spy agency, the OSS, that was the network for bringing the Nazis here. And now we see that prior to the OSS being formed, that Richard Nixon was, in fact, in the offices of Mr. Donovan and that they had called him back. So that Nixon's career spanned this time period from the Navy out to California when the aerospace scientists were being brought here. And I referred to the area where Nixon was brought in, and this is what I had. I didn't know the OSS, or not the OSS, but the Donovan connection. He applied to serve in the FBI following graduation from law school. No answer followed. When World War II was declared, he requested sea duty and went to the South Pacific Combat Air Transport Command, and came home, was transferred to Alameda, and ended up with the Navy winding down active contracts with such aircraft firms such as Bell and Glenn Marietta. And I had more details about his returning home and where he was in this article than he has in his own autobiography, because I'm sure he wants you to forget it. And like Evita Perón, and we'll get to that in a minute, she deletes major parts of her autobiography for very good reasons also. And I brought in the fact of the influx of the Nazis, the munition makers, the rocket and space industry, the warfare hardware, into the South, into the Southwest, into the segregated racist states, the natural habitat where the Germans were brought into Florida, Louisiana, Georgia, Ohio, Texas, Alabama, Nevada, New Mexico, and California. Now that's the hub of the Klan outside of Illinois and Buffalo, New York, the hub of the Nazi Party, the hub of the area where Colonel Gale is to come from the staff of Mr. Willoughby and Douglas MacArthur to California and form his identity movement, so that the American Nazi and Klan, the seeds were in California, from the Philippines to California, and the aerospace industry harbors the collective network of these people who have computers throughout the country now and can reach every Jew or every dissenter and pipe it right into the Pentagon computers, such as the Los Angeles Police Department, into Western goals. So the Nixon career spanned this particular era of the Army with a minus activity, a minus biography, and we have to guess what happened in the 2 years, but I would make a registered guess that he was actually trained heavily into intelligence because he was handpicked for an important role that he fulfilled very nicely and continues in a way to fulfill today. Now, simultaneously, while that was going on, while Nixon and Reagan were active in various ways, Reagan was to play a role that Nixon didn't do. When Nixon came out, he was a right-winger right from the start. He was going to melt with Senator Joe McCarthy and say, I'm going after Voorhees. He's breaking up I.G. Farben, and for a lot of other reasons, you put up the money and I'll run and I'll have a Red Scare campaign. That's what Nixon was doing. But the actor, the real actor, not the other one, was in Hollywood, and there were just a couple of sentences I wanted to quote for you from The Secret Life of Ronald Reagan. This is Don Freed's book, and he talks about Reagan's war years as a captain, and we know that, working for the Defense Department and making films. And as soon as the war was over, it turned from being close to the Soviet Union to the Cold War. And Reagan was very instrumental in Hollywood to coordinate his activities with Senator Joe McCarthy, J. Edgar Hoover, Richard Nixon, and others, the Right String Group, which purged and blacklisted and broke dissenters and stifled liberal or radical ideas. That's a quote from Don Freed's book. Well, there was McCarthy coming in from the Pacific, and Nixon, who had been with Hoover and Donovan, joining that team, J. Edgar Hoover working with William Stevenson and William Donovan and Senator Joe McCarthy. So the two men from the service that were brought in, one Joe McCarthy by two men from Germany that lived in Wisconsin with close Nazi ties, that fellow coming in, going to Congress, Nixon going to Congress, and Hoover working with William Stevenson and Nixon and Joe McCarthy. If, as a matter of fact, Hoover was giving McCarthy private information so he could continue his witch hunt on sex practices of various people and all the gossip to increase the career of specific politicians and to ruin others. What Don Freed wrote in The Secret Life of Reagan on page 9 was, what should be recalled is that Nixon and Reagan came out of the service at the same time, and each fanatically plunged into exploiting the same anti-communist climate to build a base of power. But Reagan's plan was secret and would go to much greater extremes than Nixon's. And here we get to the parallel of Evita Perón, and then what happened to Argentina is happening into America today. It said he would join the Screen Actors Guild and cling to it as if he was a liberal to hide his covert relationships that developed in 1947 with Nixon and the House Un-American Activities and the FBI, that he needed the help of acting the liberal to get the head of the Screen Actors Guild. And the point is made in this book. In addition, this is the same book that refers to Nancy Davis, who becomes Nancy Reagan, that her father was out in the Pacific working with Charles Willoughby, mentioned in The Secret Life of Ronald Reagan. Willoughby close to Colonel Dale, the man who was instrumental in founding the religious motive for planning to kill all the Jews and blacks for the Klan, Nazis, and Minuteman in the United States when he came back to guerrilla work in the state of California and then spreading it all around the country. But in the section on the actor, Don Fried notes that in the 1930s, Ronald Reagan was anti-union. He scorned the Screen Actors Guild. And then all of a sudden, to have the liberal image, he joined it after seeing the great man, he said, who led it. So the Screen Actors Guild was supposedly left liberal, anti-fascist in the 30s and 40s. So Reagan adapted himself to that tone and carried the liberal support. And that's the only reason he got the vote, is that he maintained his anti-fascist credentials while he was simultaneously meeting his secret energies in red hunting. And Don Fried calls attention, his liberalism, we soon shall see, was an act that while he was mediating with the labor unions in Hollywood and the mob-controlled unions, he was favoring the mob and had worked with the mob. And he used a cover of a group that would be left to get elected head of the Screen Actors Guild while simultaneously, evidently, never leaving the military role that he had for the OSS and then after, actually a conservative, but an actor playing a role. Now, another actor, very important to these situations, because the Sovereign Military Order of Malta is providing the cover for the generals and admirals of the United States Army and working with the Central Intelligence Agency. It's all come out recently, so I want to remind you, and I've had this on the air a few times, about Karol Wojtyla in Poland, who was another actor. And in 1941, his father had passed away, but a friend of his, a teacher, started a theater school. And they created a theater in the woods, and they founded a theater, and they acted at a time when all the other theaters in Krakow were not allowed. They were only for Germans. They had 22 productions during the whole occupation period. So while Ronald Reagan's in Hollywood as an actor, and Nixon's out in Whittier trying to get in plays, we have the future Pope also doing theater and theater classes under the nose of the Germans, always escaping them. And I have shared with you before how he gets out of situations where everyone else is rounded up and is never taken, and ends up with a Knights of Malta organization that is going against the rights of the Congress of the United States by funding and allowing the Vatican to be the CIA envoy under the skirts of the priest to carry the money to carry on the wars and the death squads down in South America. Now, just a few pages about Evita Peron that are really important, because she epitomizes what these other men were: poor people, actors, and how they held the power in their hands at the prime of their life, the way they worked up, and the forces that moved all of them have common denominators, which I believe are the fascists in Germany and the Vatican that put Adolf Hitler, gave him money in the first place, and the total desire for a holy war at any expense in any country to silence all the liberals and the thinkers, writers, and editors. That was going on through the 30s and 40s, and now with the intent to buy CBS, take it over, and the overt attack, it is very important to see that this country is going to become the way that these people intended and follow the way that happened in Argentina. Now, there's a very good book, the most honest biography I've ever read about any person, and it's by Paul Montgomery, called Evita, The Life and Death of Evita Peron. I just got it recently. It's put out by Pocketbook. It was published in 1979. And there's a few pages I just want to read directly to you without paraphrasing them. Eva Peron's power began from 1945 to 1952. That's as soon as the war is over and the World Commerce Corporation is going and William Donovan is swinging and the major multinationals are working with the Nazis. And while I was saying that years ago, you're seeing more and more in the news about the United States government and these various Nazis. Her power began as soon as the war was over, 1945 to 1942. Now, Mr. Montgomery says that she was a skilled manipulator of men. She climbed from job to job and from protector to protector. And that's exactly what Nixon and Reagan and Kissinger have done, along with Evita and Mr. John Paul II, Carol Wojtyla. They were handpicked. A mentor said, you go this place next, you go that next, and that next. So being a skilled manipulator wasn't enough, and they didn't climb this necessarily on their own, but there's a hand there to push them up and show them the way. He says, Evita was lashing out at the rich who had soiled her when she was a teenager and hungry for work, and she was going to alter the social structure of Argentina, remembering when she was poor, and she wanted to become a saint of the working class, of the poor. This is what Ronald Reagan toured the country. You know, I came from the Depression. My father was an alcoholic. He was the poor boy, and my brother was poor, and heck, we got this scholarship to this little college. I'm very poor, and that is very nice for a nice starter. But that doesn't end there. And then this book says she was Eva of Paris with her room full of furs and dresses and shoes and hats and Sultan's collection of jewelry. She could swing to that. And that's like Nancy Reagan with her family borrowed jewels that she borrowed from places she didn't actually buy, might have been given to her, and her dresses and her fancy and ball and inaugurations. She swings from there to this humble, like Evita, it says she'd go from the very rich to the humble, a simple woman who fed and cared for the poor, dispensing penicillin and crisp banknotes from alligator cases. And also, the Reagans go to this cabin, and they take off their fancy clothes, and they rest, and we're just simple folks. They got 600 acres there. But they always recall and put poor little children on their laps. You always see these little people she's picking up from Korea or different places around the country as if she cares about them. But it says Evita was the woman of the whip, torturing and terrifying an entire country with methods learned from her Nazi advisors. And that is very important. And she was Mama Eve, a feminist hero to the Argentines. She gave them vote and a new status in life. Well, we have the vote, so the Reagans can't do that one. In 1973, when there were wild swings on the international gold market, there was speculation in the financial press of the liquidation of $800 million in Eva's Swiss bank accounts. Now, 1952 was the real floodgate where about that many came out. But in 1973, they thought there was $800 million in the bank accounts that caused a disturbance. The year before, a writer claimed to have found Martin Bormann, Hitler's deputy in Argentina, identified Eva Braun as the agent who had been responsible for smuggling him there. Then this book goes on, Juan Braun was a man of impractical schemes and no foresight. And this is the Ronald Reagan we have formed out of the same fabric. A corrupt tyrant whose henchmen stripped the national treasury. Reagan was going to balance the budget and he's going to leave us with a legacy of a debt. Well, he pontificated from his balcony while Reagan talks his Saturday little speeches, his press conference. Perón was the kind of administrator who spent months planning automobile factories and not a second to think about constructing roads to put them on. This is exactly like having nuclear plants and weapons and atomic bombs and hydrogen bombs being built, and Reagan holding up for 5 years the clinging up of the pollution from the manufacturing of dangerous items that cause these chemicals. We don't have the faintest idea what to do with them, but we've manufactured them. This book says that after Eva died, Perón turned to the unparalleled lechery, and he spent $20 million of funds to create a national organization for high school girls, taking the money where he wants, putting it to special institutions for his own private purposes, and holding it back from other people who need it. If you read what the government is spending and sending and where they're sending it, and then telling certain people that their benefits are cut off, it's identical to Ronald Reagan putting his hands on something like the Sinfuel organization, which Mr. Stockman said a few weeks ago is wasting billions of dollars, plunking it there and deciding this is where I want it to go with no consideration of the people. Mr. Montgomery wrote, Perón's government depended on the terror inflicted by Gestapo-trained secret police, and when Eva stood by his side, she was perceived as a humanizing influence in the regime. This is very true, and Ronald can make the most awful decisions and wait for the future, what is in store for you now that he has no more elections to account for. And when he stands next to Nancy, it's always the all-loving, affectionate, and concerned person. We'll take a one-minute break briefly on this, and then I'm going into the legacy of what these people have left us and what developed from the sources behind their power and what they're doing to us now.